This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tales from the Loop, Episode 7, Enemies is Over. The Nero Post-Show recap, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course I'm not alone. I'm here with my two friends who have come back after leaving me alone on an island. First, it's DM Philly. Philly, how you doing?
I'm good. I need an extra arm, but I'm doing good.
That's good. And of course, not alone. Ariel's here as well. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm good. I feel bad for Rich and his arm situation.
This just happens. You're gonna get a cool new. You're gonna get a cool new arm.
So, yeah, so much upside.
Yeah, you'd be Luke Skywalker.
You know I love it. Nothing wrong with a mechanical arm. I'll take it. I'll stand with young Luke.
I'm a little sad that we actually do get full explanation for why.
I know. I felt bad. We talked about it last week. I think we closed out the last episode with you noting that you really didn't want to get the George Armstrong.
I want it to be Waller. I want it to be the same as Waller's eye and arm. So. Yeah, but alas. All right, enemies, we're almost done here. This is the penultimate episode of Tales from the Loop. And we're going to recap it here. We'll be back next week with the finale. Still, make sure you subscribe because you never know where we're going to pop up next as we travel around watching various sorts of TV shows and movies. So pushyourrecaps.com/dark is the feed, or you can search Push Your Recaps and Dark in the podcaster app of choice, or you can go to pushyourrecaps.com/subscribe. It should be there as well. So the penultimate episode, as I said last week, this episode by directed by Ty West. Rich, it was pretty spooky, scary. It's a full-on horror episode. Yeah.
We took a hard turn. We're dealing with monsters and scary, frightening things. It struck me, I think, like tonally, it stands apart from the rest of the season in a pretty strong way. I love the material. I know that, you know, we've been talking about it the whole way through, that so much of this show is based in these kind of character dramas, and we're really interrogating the people less so than the technology. But I love an AI story. I thought it was really fun, and I thought it was an interesting approach for us to, like, get a little bit of insight into George and where he comes from as a person, and deal with some weird loop craziness, but definitely a scary one.
Yeah, I thought, and in addition to George, it's also, there's a fair bit about, like, Russ and what he's doing. As, like, we get Jonathan Pryce back on the show for a bit. Ariel, what'd you make of this episode?
Yeah, I kind of thought that the George was like the Waller's arm of the show, in the sense of we were just never really going to get much about him, period. And you know, I should have known there would probably be an episode. So that's on me. But I really liked the episode. I thought it was so fun to watch. And, like, I think we got some beats that we hadn't gotten before. Yeah, there was the sci-fi stuff, but there was horror stuff also. And it was just, I was like glued to my TV/laptop computer when I had to switch over.
Yeah, I really like this one. I think this one stands out to me as, like, hitting, as I think, as good as some of the beginning of the show. I definitely think in retrospect we sort of, like, end up being in a little bit of a lull throughout the middle course of the season, after what I think are, like, some really strong, basically I think the first three or four are particularly strong, and I feel like this is good. I really like the choice to flash back to George's childhood and sort of keep that, like, coming of age theme, but with a character we know, but, you know, at a different point in his life, and how that sort of shapes him as an adult, and some of the way he navigates the world as a grown man. So I really liked that choice of the flashbackness, because I think for me, where the show has hit the most is, you know, in those images, they're not all kids, Rich, Stalenhag's images, but so many of them. And I think the ones that really resonate with me are. And so I think it was a smart choice to like, yeah, we can talk about George, but we're going to basically spend most half of the episode with him as a kid.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. You talk about the coming of age theme and how many of Stalenhag's still works have children in them. And I think that part of it is that he's a guy like of my age. He grew up in the 80s. He's one of these like old millennials, basically. And there's something about what he's drawing. It's the 80s that never was, right? This kind of speculative history, but it's a very recent history and it's contemporary. And I think that it's inherently kind of fused with imagination. And that's part of the reason that this guy's still images have created tabletop role-playing games. He's published a couple of books. You have now the series. Like, it inspires people. It ignites the imagination when you look at this guy's art. And I think that that tracks with the aspect of growing up, of being a kid, that like Charlie Brown dynamic of like the adults are never really going to get it to a degree, you know? I think that's like firmly rooted in the world of the loop. And I loved revisiting George in this way, and especially the fact that we kind of obfuscate that it's George for a while, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a really, really cleverly designed episode. I'm glad you both like it, because I came away from this one wondering, oh my gosh, this one stands so much apart from the first six episodes. I wonder if you guys would feel down on it or disappointed that we've like taken a deviation.
I was down when it ended. I was like, no.
Oh yeah.
And it's George. I don't know that we've like we all love George, but like I did. No, I think it was good. So let me give a quick plot recap here of episode 7, and then we'll chat about whatever we want to. We meet small George. We don't know it's him, and he's hanging out with his friends, working on a radio. They go to the movies, and they're playing in the woods, and they talk about an old story of a monster from the loop who lives on an island. They take a boat across, and George's two friends leave George on the island as a prank. He is bitten by a snake in the arm, and he meets the robot monster from the story, but he is ultimately rescued. But when he returns home, his arm is amputated and replaced with a robotic arm. We flash forward to the future, where George talks to his mother, who tells him the monster was a creation of his father, Russ, and that it was not put there for the protection of the citizens of the town, but instead safety for the monster itself. At the end of the episode, George returns to the island to see the robot again, where they seem to recognize each other. I don't know. I do like it. This is another one where I feel like, you know, I think this one is one where the tech is like, the tech isn't quite as maybe like it doesn't have as much implication for like the world as much as other episodes do, where even though the tech is minimal, it's like, oh my God, they're like totally freezing time for like, you know, for forever. Right. But I think that the idea of this, I mean, this is so like the AI-ness thing is like, especially, you know, as AI has become a huge topic of conversation in our present day. I don't think necessarily for the same reasons, but this is such a common thing of like, you know, whether or not you should build AI. This is like Westworld and literally the movie AI and all of these movies that are like, when does AI start to have consciousness, right? And so this idea that George is left on the island, but also that this monster is left on the island, not because it's a dangerous creature for humans, but that that's the safest place for it to just like live and hang out and not be basically destroyed or attacked by humans, I think is like really fun. And so that dynamic between George, who's like left alone, and is then going to become someone who's like, you know, different. He becomes somebody who doesn't, you know, he has his arm amputated, and the ostracization that he's already has before that happens, being paralleled with the monster, I thought was really effective, Rich.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, there's the whole dynamic here where it's ultimately his sibling in a sense, right? These are the children of Russ, and he is this only child. His father's gone. He's got this like kind of gaping hole. It was not the tightest of relationships, as we know, right? Like if Russ was a man who worked a lot and didn't really invest a hell of a lot in the bond that he had with his son. And so this notion of coming back at the end, the way that, you know, there's so much kind of mirrored between them. The foreshadowing, I think, is excellent. of the kids like throw the snake and it hits George's arm and it falls off and then he's out there and then it will be a snake that bites him off and then he takes the robot's arm off and the exchange of the arm at the end I think is really poignant and insightful. I feel you in terms of the like potential of the technology. It doesn't feel as impactful certainly as we're revisiting this series in 2023 and there are AI bots everywhere. AI has become like ubiquitous enough to have kind of saturated the consumer markets at this point. It's no longer something that is preserved for the kind of elite big brains at Google as they're building out their AI system. So it's a really interesting dynamic because I think that, you know, the robot, in a sense, it has no voice, right? It's like robbed of this voice. Its only ability to communicate is seemingly in this like very frightening, kind of terrifying scream. That
I bet you could do a good impression of it, Rich. I feel like you do a similar voice a lot in your monsters. Yeah,
I mean, I definitely
do. I won't curse people's ears with that, but if you listen to some twitch.tv/DM Philly, you'll hear that.
Make a lot of horrible wailing screeching noises, yeah. Much mm-hmm. akin to this robot Ariel. This is what I'm known for. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have heard some for myself, and it's pretty scary. scary good, but yeah, to the point about the technology not kind of affecting the story in the same way. I was certainly looking for it. Some of the sci-fi aspects. I was like, oh my God, he's the guy on the island. He's the monster. I kept looking for the thing, the twist. And the twist was really that it was in the past. So I guess that is a twist, but I kept waiting for like the more tales from the loopy thing. But I think in a good way that surprised me that it wasn't there. It was more about like people's relationship with technology and like how we feel about, you know, our emotional reactions and the way we confront things that are different from us and all that. And so it was the stand-in for what would have been like different in a different episode, but I thought it was super emotionally effective. And the getting his, you know, his connection to this monster, quote unquote, and also like how it has affected his relationship with his family and his son, who's like curious and obviously doesn't want to talk about it or whatever lie he told about it. It's a little melancholy in a way that I enjoy.
I do think there's definitely that note of the othering that happens with George once he loses his arm, right? And like, it's a thing. It becomes a thing that makes him different. And
yeah, he's watching the boy in the theater, right? Which is kind of like, it's, you kind of can think it's like in there for no reason, but he's basically seeing a boy with Down syndrome and seeing that like, yeah, it's another way that people are othered in society. Yeah,
I think it's really poignant, you know, in terms of the fact that he develops this empathy at the end. And I think there's a really interesting commentary about bad parenting happening here, too. Mm-hmm. Right. And the fact that like Russ has kind of like failed his son in a way. And George is compartmentalizing in a certain way, like carrying that on with his kids. But then
we know this is the time where he's not around. Right.
Yeah.
It's like exactly. Yeah,
it is. Right. And Russ ultimately like invests himself in creating this AI child, this Pinocchio of his own. That then like his means of protecting it is to like just put it on a boat and send it into the middle of some like lake in Ohio, presumably.
It's basically the same way that he did, but his kid, right? He acknowledges that like he was not around. He just like focused on work. So he's kind of like left George on an island to himself.
Emotionally.
I mean, I do feel like to a sense, I was gonna say that I feel like some of the ideas, it's kind of interesting how some of the AI-ness, the stories that have historically been told about AI actually feel quite a bit dated. Although, Ariel, you and I, we watched The Creator a few weeks ago, and that I feel like also has this like, it's similar, right? It's like humanizing artificial intelligence to a degree. That's like pretty much the thesis of that story. And yet I do feel like part of the thing about AI that's happening in our world right now is not like, oh my God, we have to like take care of it and like make sure it's not like, you know, oh, it also has sentience and it's, you know, we're going to humanize it. It's like, oh my God, all the information it's spewing out might not be actually good information to spew out. Like, I wonder if at some point we will get this switch into like, I don't know. Can you think of anything other media that like the AI story is not like, oh my God, we need to protect AI, or like to the point where like if we create AI, it will destroy us. I feel like it's more like the stuff we're seeing with like ChatGPT is like, well, yeah, it's also taking all of our biases and all of our, you know, stuff, and it's just like spewing out wrong information until it would get better. You know what I mean? I feel like we're not that far removed from Tales from the Loop. And yet I feel like it's AI's come a long way since Tales from the Loop. I don't know if that tracks.
Oh, I mean, I just was going to say, I think that, you know, we're on the bleeding edge of like the AI indoctrinating society in a really like systemic way, right? It's available to all of us. It's become available to the common consumer around the world. And so we're focusing, I think, on like the ways in which it's feeding into like the onslaught of dystopian capitalism, late stage capitalism, rather than the actual terrifying Terminator style, like end of the world, apocalyptic kind of like robot wars that we're going to get Foundation style, right? I think like give it 10 years and we'll be worrying no longer about its incompetence, but its hypercompetence, right? That's my take on the AI.
Yeah. So I do like the choice to not let us know it's George until, and it's sort of funny because so many of us, like I said last week, that I almost never want the explanation for the arm, but I think that to never tell us and then use it as this way to almost like a twist within the show of like, it's when his arm gets amputated that we're then going to realize like, oh my God, that's George. I think it's like a really clever writing technique from the show. I know all of these episodes are written by Nathaniel Halpern, but I was really impressed with that in particular, to basically just kind of like drop us in the world. And then because we know things about the world already, i.e. in this example that George has a robotic arm, that like when that happens, you're like, oh, I thought that was so, it's such a fun choice that I think really works in the anthology lens of the show, I think, to a degree. I don't know. What do you think, Rich?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I thought it was a great reveal. There's the point on the island where the kids are like kind of yelling for him and they do say his name, but it's very dim, right? You can't really hear it. They're kind of calling George. And like, are we really thinking about George? No, Ariel.
Well, they haven't done this, right? They haven't flashed, right?
I have my subtitles on and I caught that. And even I in the moment didn't even put that together.
But they haven't flashed back, right? They've only flashed forward. Am I right in that?
Well, we got Loretta as a kid too, right? We moved.
Oh, but that's time travel. That's not.
Yeah, I don't think there was like the traditional flashback like it's used here before. So I think that's, you know, another way that the show is like pulling that trick on you. That's very effective
because we open in the flashback and like linger there, right? That's kind of the same technique that we used with Loretta with the time travel.
Well, it's interesting that the two people they use it are end up being married, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've talked about both of them as parents. I think that I did see a very funny comment on Reddit that's like, the fact that George was left alone on an island and got his arm bitten off, it is wild that he lets Cole like just like hang out in the woods. Very funny. Yeah. But you know, Loretta was seen as somebody who early, right? Like when she has this conversation with young Loretta, it's like, oh, that's how you seem too, right? Like you're like, you don't want to be a mom, right? And so there's this idea that like maybe she hasn't been, or that's Cole says that to young Loretta. She's like, that's how my mom feels too sometimes. So right from her own son, this feeling like she's maybe not the greatest mom or the most attentive, or maybe has other things going on. And George, to a degree, like he does go to check in, I think, on I think it's fake Danny at that point, right? Or fake up. And he had one of my favorite lines still from the show is like, he's like, I don't even want to talk about it. He's like, I don't want to talk about it either. I'm just like doing my dadly duty. And we know that like Russ was not a great father. So this idea of like parent, I think it's interesting to like flash us back to these two, like the people that we get glimpses of them as children, and how you know, everything that's happening in this show leads them to be like who they are. You know, it's like the choice that they made to then, you know, in a show that's about coming of age, then these are the people who are raising, like you're raising Cole and Jacob slash Danny. So I think it's an interesting choice as to who they use the flashbacks on.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like in that way, it's like kids raising kids because they're still dealing with their, you know, childhood trauma. And it's hard being a parent and having to be emotionally engaged all the time to your kids, because like every single moment is like potentially world-breaking for this child of like, is this my fault, you know? So it's a lot of responsibility, and then you add all this other stuff onto it, and it's not really great for the kids.
No, we've like deep dived this family too, right? I mean, we're 7 episodes in and we've gotten 5 now circling in on this family between Jacob and Cole and Loretta and now George. And ultimately we see the way that it is, like, you know, the apples in the trees, right? And the trauma carrying forward and the inability of these people to actually parent their own children better than they were parented is really fascinating. And I think it like ties back to Dark in a way. The whole monster in the lake thing too, I felt was like very Darkian, right? Like it's not quite his father, but it's his father's monster that he left there. So it's not like the full circle loop. I also had a real question for you guys. I think that we're pretty firmly in the LVP camp with Faka in terms of like, yeah, Danny and his body snatching. You know?
I don't think literally anybody can beat him.
But maybe, how do we feel about these two kids? Just comparing them, like not even LVP wise, but like these two kids and what they do to George. Like they're hanging out by the river. They're throwing snakes at their friend. They're playing with the cattle prod. Like this is a little bit, I give them a little bit of boys will be boys for the first pass. But at the point that they abandon their friend on this island, seemingly in the middle of like one of the Great Lakes, Ariel, like, is this at all acceptable behavior? Did you guys have friends like this when you were kids?
No, I want to say no. It's hard to like know for sure what people would have been capable of, but this is awful stuff. And you think it would end, like my memory of this kind of thing of like, oh, we're gonna pull this prank on you, is like fairly quickly they, you know, have to turn back around or whatever, you know, there's like there's much less time for the trauma to set in and for them to just leave. Like this is like a Danny move, right? Like how do you go to bed and like you've done this horrible thing?
Oh, right.
Like, oh, that person's on the island, whatever. And yes, oops, they're kids, but like you did this thing to them. So it's pretty effed up. They do for just- sure.
Wow, do I have an effed up childhood? I don't think it's, to me, it is effed up, but I don't think it's like that. Like, it is definitely worse than anything that happened to anybody who I was a kid with. But also, like, it's not that much worse. You know, like, honestly, it's the fact that he gets bit by the snake. It's like, you know,
well, yeah, I mean, the snake bite ends up bad, but this is the kind of stuff that happens when you abandon a kid on an island. Over,
yeah, the island part is hard for me. There's like no way for him to like,
it's a big lake too, you know. I
guess I'm more in line with like the Dark TV show Dark, where it's like, so I absolutely as a kid was like tied up to a tree, not and left alone all night, but like, so again, it's like the show takes it always like one step further than like what actually happens to me. Yeah
listen, I was part of a real rambunctious crew when I was a young man, and we did a lot of like dumb reckless things that reminded me of this. And there's an element of me like growing up in the 80s like without the tether to my parents, feeling like, oh yeah, this kind of stuff happens. But then I am just like, no, I think this is insane. Like, this is the kind of thing that gets kids locked up in juvie if they were to do it nowadays. Like, this is really wild to just leave him out there. I, you know, back to what you're talking about of like that Reddit comment, that it's crazy that George lets his kids go out into the world and wander around this way, given that he was attacked by a monster. I think it's crazier that he's so disconnected from his kids. Back to that line, Grace, of like, you think I want to ask? I don't really care. After having had this experience as a young person, right? To be so divorced from the kind of cruelty that children can inflict upon one another, the absolute like callousness of their behavior in this moment. Like, there's an element where if you're watching in the know, like I'm obviously rewatching, right? Those two kids know exactly what they're doing the second they get George on that boat. Like, they're in the backseat smirking at one another as they drive him out there. And it does play to Danny in the same way of like, it, you know, ultimately Jacob is George's son and he trusts his friend, and his friend betrays him like grievously. And this is exactly the same kind of thing that happened to George as a young man, right? And that he's so like emotionally divorced from his children that he's not a little bit more, the fact that this experience doesn't leave him more attentive to the difficulties of childhood childhood, right? And the hardship, just forget the supernatural science fiction loop of it all. Just going to like elementary school, high school, dealing with all the pressure of that, that he like abandons them so emotionally, it like stands out to me. The way that these kids' behavior mirrors Danny, I think feels like an important theme that we're exploring in Loop, you know?
But then I think sometimes you, when you are like, you know, when you have parents who are like inattentive, that's like, there's like, basically I think a lot of times people either become much like their, they repeat the behavior, yes, or they exhibit the opposite behavior. I don't know how, yes, true. I need like Dr. Amanda to tell me whether that's, you know, it's like how false that statement is. But that's what I feel like often happens. So the idea that he's actually like, he thinks he's potentially repeating the behavior of his, he's trying not to repeat the behavior of his father, but he actually doesn't have any of the skills to not repeat it, is I think interesting to me in terms of like why he maybe, is not as attentive to his children as he thinks he should be. Right. There's also sometimes the, like, you know, the worst thing that happened to me was like, yeah, I got my arm bit, but like, I'm fine. You know, like, you know, what's the worst that can happen to them? I don't know. I think it's the, although he doesn't, and even the scary monster, ultimately the takeaway is like, he's like not scared of like the monster seems fine. Right. He like reconciles. He like, is empathetic towards the monster. I think that's another thing that I think the show that has been interesting is the way in which it can be tonally dark, but also where it's seeding in like thing, like bits of optimism, because I do feel like the ending of this episode is very optimistic. Am I wrong to think George gives his arm? Does he give his arm to?
No, he does. He gives his arm to the robot because he like cattle prodded it, and like the guy lost his arm, right, Ariel? Right. That, like, that's what I saw.
Yeah, that was my takeaway, especially when it ends there. Yes, he did. He did cattle prod him. So, you know, an arm for an arm. And the thing with young George that was interesting to me is like, we see him on the dock before they get on the boat to go to the island. He's eating an apple and, you know, he's already bitten into it. And then, you know, the snake. So like the metaphor is very much there, and like the knowledge that he gets, and he's tempted, and then the snake does bite him, and he pays this somewhat harrowing price of like losing his arm, but thankfully he's okay. So I thought that was intentional, obviously. And like, they're trying to see that metaphor in there, which is like a pretty, analog metaphor, if I do say so myself, and like a very tech kind of show.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. I think the Frankenstein of it all, too. I mean, I talk about Pinocchio, but it's very much Frankenstein story, right? Of like the monster having empathy. And I, you know, I just really like the notion at the end that George goes back to his mother and has this reveal where he's like, oh, did he talk to you about this? And she's like, why? And George is saying, because he's gone now, because like he can't tell us anything. And the fact that she knows as much as she does and is so sort of casual about the way that she explains, like, oh, it was alive, like it was like a child to him, he sent it out there to be protected, which again, like, he doesn't take it there and leave it, he just puts it in the boat and shoves it out into the lake, which speaks to me just of the recklessness of Russ as a scientist too, right? Like, that's, you could go the extra step of like, I'm gonna take the boat to the island and leave the robot there, but he doesn't. There's this element of like, it's, once it's out of its hands, it's out of his hands, and that's really interesting.
Or is he a scientist and he's doing an experiment to see how it works?
We'll get there, I guess. We got one more episode left, so we'll see where it goes. I just think that it's really interesting, and the fact that like his mom knows as much as she does, like that speaks to me of her being like a potential trove of more. What else does she know that like Russ left with her that seems incidental, that is actually of critical importance, or could be like a really pivotal discovery or whatever it is? It's kind of compelling. So here's a question, I guess. Did it occur to you at all, or were you at all left wondering, is George a real boy by the end of this? Is that like a thought that was provoked at all for you guys?
Not at all. No. Okay. Real boy all the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was the moment where the girl writes the note to him, like, are you a robot? And it almost felt like the episode could have ended there, maybe not narratively, but kind of, you know, as far as the message that they're trying to send, the theme. And in that moment, I did kind of consider like, oh, what does it mean to be, you know, part robot and all that stuff.
I literally have a device. If I take it off, I can't. I literally will die. So mm-hmm. not immediately, but over time, I will die. So I'm team robot. World. All the way.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm really in on this theory that I just now came up with, that Russ just created. This was like the evolution of him creating the robots, and it's George. And
well, that's what his mom says to him. She says, like, Russ knew that whatever he made next, the next one needed to be more like us, right?
Yeah, this in that moment, that went totally over my head.
Me too. Yeah, because we haven't seen any, right? Everything else we've seen is, like, pretty robot-y, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the technology is, like, overtly retro in its design, right? That's part of, like, Stalin Hogg's aesthetic. But his mother notes to him that, like, again, this idea of the othering, right? That part of the deal is, like, this thing was received poorly because it looks the way it looks. It looks like a big robot. But he knew whatever he did after this, whatever the next version was, would have to look more like us. And so then I think we go, I think that the, like, are you a robot scene has happened already before that. But to me, it provokes this question of like, oh, is like philosophically that how we're supposed to be approaching George for the rest of the episode? Like, are you even real? Is that part of what George is asking himself as he ends up going back out there, right? I don't know. It was just a thought that occurred to me, but yeah.
No, I mean, I don't, I think you could, I mean, I feel like you're a smarter TV viewer than I am for having like, I think that's like completely a fair read that like, George might be a robot, which I think in the way that this show, like, you know, it's interesting. There's only one more episode to go, right? And mm-hmm. everything has been pretty anthology. Like everything, it's in the same world, but everything's been sort of its own story. And yes, like Cole has been like sort of like a side character in two episodes because he's in episode one and he's in episode four. And so we're dealing with like these, and obviously like George is in the show, but it's very separate. I'm really intrigued to see how this ends. Cause I think when the show started and there's this idea, and I'm sorry, Rich, I'm completely going to segment into a scenario where you have to then at the end say, okay, interesting. cause you've seen it. Interesting. We'll see. Which is like how this sort of like wraps up. How do you wrap up like an anthology story that does have overarching themes and it's all set in the same universe? And I thought, like, I think episode one does toy a lot with the idea that like Loop, there's more to Loop than we know. And I'm really intrigued to see whether or not for either any number of reasons, like whether or not that gets revealed at all, or like what has been revealed to us is basically the idea that like they're building artificial intelligence robots. They built a machine that can tell you how long you're going to live. They have a machine that like stopped time. They seemingly were like playing with multiverse portals, right? Like all is that like, was the implication at the beginning of like what the possibilities of Loop are. Is it just that like, okay, now we'll see them over the course of the show and like whether or not, and I think I just have like, I know this comes before it, but like Severance brain of like Loop being Lumen Industries. Although I do feel like still like the shadiness of Russ to a degree, I think has like, keeps that for me on the board, but I'm really interested to see where they go in a finale. And it could be one that we don't get that answer because that's not the intent of the show, or it could be that that's not the purpose of season one, presumably that they wondered whether they would get a season two. So I don't know, Errol, do you have thoughts on like, yeah, we've been so anthology. How do you wrap up a season of TV that has been both anthology and there are things that connect us between each episode?
Yeah. And George especially is somebody who was there at the beginning, although like we already said, kind of hiding on the, in the sidelines a little bit. The short answer is I don't know, but and to your point, the thing about this having been canceled and like what were the potential implications for like a season two if it had been successful and how does that impact where you end it? I can just say that I hope that it, even if it doesn't like wrap up things as far as like origins, as far as like explaining some of this Loop stuff, which your mileage may vary if you even need that. I don't think I always need that. But if it's not going to be some of the mythology, I think it, I would hope for like just emotional beats that feel familiar to the whole season. Maybe we're revisiting one story, maybe we're revisiting, you know, a lot of stories across vignettes, across an episode, whatever it may be. But I hope it feels as important as some of these other episodes have felt.
I would say that, you know, without like spoiling anything that's
done, don't spoil like, anything, Rick.
I shall not. I shall do my damnedest. There, you know, there's some clear themes that we've explored, and there is this idea of, I think, this family is central that we've delved into with the Cole and the Jacob, and we are moving kind of chronologically forward to a degree. So even though we're going in all these separate directions, we keep shifting the camera to these more peripheral characters in the maze and the Gaddises as we go. There's a strong theme, I think, to the season. And I'm really excited to be able to talk through the finale with you guys when you scope it out. I think that they very much knew, you know, we got one season to do this thing. They didn't have like hopes, or they may have had hopes, I should say, to go forward with it, but there was no expectation of a further run here. So it's not at least truncated in the way that 1899 was for us or something like that. Like we will have some finality, at least in terms of Halpern's direction of what this one season was supposed to be.
Can I say one other thing I thought was really interesting in the show that's like not really like central to, I think, the rest of the themes, but when they talk about whether or not George, like, why doesn't he get an upgraded arm? And I thought that's really fascinating because I think that as somebody who lives with, I wear many devices on my body. I have a continuous glucose monitor and I have an insulin pump, and I do get annoyed when like there's a new mod. I'm like so used to the thing I have. So a good example of this is like the Dexcom G6 is one of the versions of the Dexcom, that the one that I've been wearing for probably a couple of years. And the G7 just got announced. And part of the
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. And so part of the thing is that the G7 is actually a fair bit smaller than the G6. And as somebody who sort of like uses my devices as a little bit of like advocacy, like I do try to like, someone asked me like why I never tuck in the tubing of my insulin pump. Like, have you ever seen me? It's like hanging out, which does get annoying because sometimes it like, there was a meme going around online of like the scariest Halloween costume for a person living with type 1 diabetes who wears an insulin pump is a doorknob, because you're like tubing gets caught on it and like pulls out your thing. For me, I do it as a little bit of like advocacy of like, it's totally normal to have to be living with diabetes and to like have to wear this thing. And I like when people ask me, like, I work for a diabetes organization, so I like when people ask me questions, because then I feel like I can like destigmatize diabetes and I can like answer questions and get rid of misinformation. And so this idea that the device that I would wear on my arm is getting increasingly smaller. I keep joking that like when like the G12 is out, I'll be like, where did I put it on my body again? I'm gonna have to like be searching everywhere for this little tiny like minuscule sensor. But I am also a type of person who's like, yeah, okay, like whatever. Like I believe our good friend Corey B one time was talking about like, you know how we all get mad when like the UI changes on a website and then two weeks later, I hate it. Yeah, but then 2 weeks later, we're like, I don't even remember what the old UI looked like, you know? And so you just move on. I'm kind of like that, where I'm like, ah, fine, I'll do like whatever, I'll do it, because like, you know, stuff won't be up to date or the support for the previous one will be gone. But I just love this notion of like, no, I have what I have and it works for me. As a little bit of like, I feel like earlier when we had, is it Ethan who lives with like a disability, like with his foot, he has yep, a club foot. I like some of this like disability advocacy that's kind of in here. I feel like it's like really well written and it would go completely under the radar. But this idea of like, you know, I don't need the most, you know, I'm cool with what I have and it works for me and it does what I do. I don't know. I just like really liked that notion. And there's something in it, I think, to me, of like someone who like doesn't love change. I like routine. I don't love change. So like kind of like can see that in George of like, nah, then I have to get used to the new one. And like, maybe it's like a little bit awkward and clunky and they think they're advancing it, but actually it's not. Why wouldn't I keep the thing that I have? I don't know. I just really liked that peacefully.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, right? I'm like the old man gray beard of our little like party. And again, like as somebody from the 80s, part of it is, I think, just aesthetically, it's retro tech, you know? Yeah. It is this like weird 80s sci-fi where it's supposed to be big and clunky, and I love that. But I'm like old enough to have seen the iteration of a lot of technologies. Every new edition of Dungeons & Dragons, Grace, I'm like losing it. I'm apoplectic, you know? I really appreciate technology and innovation, but at the same time, I think there's a great beat where the technician is going over his old arm and is like, this old arm is really a workhorse. Oh my gosh, it's put together so good. And you talk about before, Ariel, an analogy of the apple and the snake and all of it. Like, there's something to mechanical technology over digital technology. As a guy that like lives and dies by my chainsaw and my tractor, like, I got 100-year-old tractors that I could go outside, turn the key in the middle of dead winter. That effort starts. That is it. It just starts and it runs and I can beat it into the ground. We're like, go get your brand new 2024 fuel injected Mazda Miata, whatever it is. And like the weather gets weird, an electronical thing goes, a sensor, it's a $3,000 stop at the, like, there is something to the planned obsolescence of modern technology, the like constant seeking of the profit margin, and like you're using cheaper and cheaper and cheaper metals. I was talking to her dear friend Taylor Ball a couple of days ago, and she just got a new car and had to take out a brake light, and immediately the screw strips as she puts a screwdriver to it. So there's part of me that like loves this notion of like, no, I don't want the newest version of the arm. I want my good 40-year-old arm, Ariel.
I think it's also in there, Ariel, to also be like, when George does give up his arm, it's like a big
deal.
He would do it and give it to the robot. But
right. And like now he's like, all right, fine, I'll get the newer model because, you know, I have to because I've given you yours. Rich, when you've been out on your tractor, you said, have you ever like encountered like holes in the field?
Oh, yeah, you bet, man. Like that?
No. They don't lead to multiverses. They're just very annoying.
Big hole. They're just moles.
It's out in the outer range, the big hole behind my field. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Let's chat MVP, LVP. I think the LVP is pretty easy here, Rich. You name dropped them before, but George's buddies, right? Gotta be.
Yeah, we got a double whammy LVP, these douchebag kids, right? I think that their names are Chris and Adam, but like, let's double down. Let's give them each half a point. These kids suck, man. These are not good friends, George.
Well, if we keep all giving them half a point, like if you give them half a point, I'm going to give them half a point. So that's a full point that they each get. Ariel, what about you? What are you thinking for LVP?
Oh, God. So what do I do? Do I split my points and then they each get only one and a half? Or do I concentrate my full point on one of them, the true or evil one?
Which one is it? Is it Chris or
there's
Adam?
The evil one. I think he's the blonde one.
He does seem a little bit more menacing. He really doesn't want to let go of that cattle prod, Ariel. Yeah,
he's I don't know. Yeah, I think just for math purposes, I'll keep it easier.
All right.
Give it to him.
The blonde
his
one?
Friend, but his friend gets an honorable mention.
I don't know which one it is, so I'm just going to...
I think Adam is the blonde one. I think Adam is the blonde one, and Chris is the other one, I think.
Great. All right, MVP here. Part of me wants... That robot survived on that island for a very long time all by himself.
With one his eye. Official name is the Vagabond, Nathaniel Halpern.
Oh, that's
there's
great.
Like a little bit of extra section that he does where he talks about George's past. It's named in the title credits. They talked about having to like spend a lot of time on the face, on the design of the robot. So when
it looks
the reveal
good.
At the end, it looks like friendly and empathetic and like a kind of charitable face. You know, it has a little bit of like a dog muzzle. Like, it's a pretty cute robot.
I could give my MVP to Ty West, who legitimately got me with the jump scare, which is when George hears the Spanshee screech in the middle of the night, it like fully got me. I don't get jump scared a lot, and that one got me. It's a horrifying noise he makes. I could give it to Ty West, maybe. I'm gonna do it. There it is.
Something like that. Right?
I knew it.
I'm upset. I am also giving it to Ty West.
There we
go. I had like a whole explanation ready. I had PowerPoint slides. No, it's incredible.
Ooh, I want the slideshow. Like,
and just like some of the shots have stayed with me. The biggest one being like when Russ sends the robot away, the Vagabond away to the island originally, there's a shot of like the robot is like looking over his shoulders, and you see his eyes, and they're like that bluish green, not like very kind of friendly looking, like vaguely warm. And then behind him across the water, you see Russ, but really you just see the light reflected in his glasses.
In his eyes,
and there was just something about that, that like, it almost looked like a comic book panel. It was really beautiful. And there were a lot of shots like that. And the, you know, a lot of the foreboding, the jump scares, like you said, Grace, some great Ty West stuff here.
Yeah, I think he did a great job framing the episode. I'm with you, Ariel. There was some imagery that I thought was really striking. I love the kids going out in the boat as they're sailing past like this row of buoys that are sort of in a loop around the coastline in a really interesting way. The shots of like George in the log too. The one that really got me of everything in this episode is the ants on his windowsill. The like sound of the clicking and the clacking of the ants against the glass was like,
The ants on his arm, that's something that I never need to see again.
Yeah, we don't love that. The green pus of like the snake bite wound. I'm going to MVP George, man. This kid's a little champion. He survived overnight with the snake bite wound in the middle of a brutal rainstorm, hiding from Robo Monster. Like, this kid did a pretty good job. He reacted well. When he thought he was being attacked, he leapt forward with the cattle prod. He took the robot's arm off. He kept the cattle prod all those years and explained to his son, as you do, No, this is for nothing. You can never use it again. I got to give George a little love, man. Like, way to survive. Way to stay alive through the night, George.
You know, I like it. I'm going to actually split my points. I'm going to give half to T-West and half to, or Ty-West and half to George. So
George is sweet. He gives the arm up at the end. I do really like the closing. You know, I feel like I haven't talked as much about the production elements and design, but gosh, I just feel like they do such a great job realizing all the weird technology and the strange stuff of this place and the loop as it was. And I do love that it ends on this optimistic note that like George has seemed pretty much like a sad sack the whole way through. And like, there's a little element of like, look, now you got family. You got a brother, George. You got a brother out here.
I think what I like about the show is I invoked Star Wars earlier, and I'll do it again, is I feel like the show does a really good job of balance. And I feel like when the episode is dark, it ends on an optimistic note. And when the episode is like more optimistic or like light, it can like end on a truth note. And so I'm interested to see how they choose to end the show. My thought is that we end optimistically. I feel like those have been the stronger episodes of when it's like, when we're going along and it's been like the tone is dark for most part. And then it's like, but there is light, like, you know, that to me has been like, and that's kind of, I think maybe even like the TV shows I like the spoiled dark, but I feel like that's dark, right? Is it, there's so much of like, this place is a festering wound, but maybe there's some good people.
But there, you know, is, I think, hope.
Yeah. Yep. So, I really think that that's strong. I'm interested for next week. All right, let's rate the episodes. I think I gave episode 4 a perfect 8. I think I'll do the same for this one. I really, really like this episode a lot.
Wow.
So I'm going to give it a full 8 points. 8 out of 8. Rich, you have given the episodes. Episode 1, a 6.9. Nice. Episode 2, 7.5. 3 is 6.7. 4 is 7.8. That's your highest. Then a 6 point, back-to-back 6.7s for 5 and 6.
I'm going to go with the 7.7. I really, really like this episode, but I don't know that it's necessarily my favorite one. I think it's like really strong. I think that the only things I really have to knock against it is it like feels like it stands apart from the rest of the season in a certain way. But in the other sense, like I almost want the rest of the season to like pull into this a little bit more and be more like this. I really like this episode.
Rich, can I then tease though for your, because you, the highest rating you've given is Echosphere, which is a 7.8, and you said that this one that we just watched is not your favorite. Is episode 4 your favorite?
I'm
basically teasing about whether or not.
I don't know. That's a good question. You'll have to tune in next week find out. Listener.
Very good. All right, Ariel, you gave episode 1 a perfect 8, then a 6.9 for episode 2, 6.5 for episode 3. Back-to-back 7.7s for 4 and 5, and then a tick up for 7.8 in episode 6.
Oh, God. Okay, here we go. I feel like it's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'm down to 2. I've used my 50-50, and...
you want to phone a friend? I'm right here.
It's either 7, it's either 7.9 or 8. Oh, I'm trying to remember.
You could do 7.95.
I could, but then what if, okay, here's my only,
yeah, your dilemma,
the only quandary. Like, if I like this, if I end up liking this more than episode 8, I should have given this a perfect score is kind of how I feel about it. So I won't.
We've never done it, but nobody said you can't be like, hey, Grace, could you fix my previous?
I know. But still, yeah. I don't want to get into that because then the multiverse opens up and it's like, oh,
I feel
God.
Like 7.95 is a safe. It's like you're like so close to me and it leaves you the littlest wiggle room to be like next up. And you've already given a perfect episode. So it's like, you know.
Right. But was this
Is this as good as the premiere, in your opinion?
It's hard.
Which is the time traveling Loretta.
Like, fine. 7.95. Final answer.
I think it's a good choice. Yeah. You got wiggle room and you could like 7.975.
with that, I think because of my, this is, although I gave episode 4 and 8 as well, this just slightly edges out episode 4 as our favorite episode overall.
Yeah. It's a really good one. I think that, I don't know. It's very fun the way that we kind of deal with all of it. There's good reveals. It's really paced well too, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is us for this week. Until then, Rich, what do you got going on and where can people find you?
Oh, I'm at DM Philly in all the places over Twitch, on YouTube. I'm talking about we're going to be wrapping up the Winter King coverage. The season one has finished, but we're just getting started. Prez and I will be talking about the finale of that. Beacon 23, new show coming up over on MGM+, plus starring Lena Headey, Cersei Lannister, back on our TV. I'm going to be talking about that with Corey B. Melissa and I breaking down Dimension 20 show, Burrow's End. So I'm hanging out. I'm talking about stuff.
Ariel, what about you?
I am covering movies every week with you, Push Recaps Theater, covering The Morning Show, which is coming to an end this week.
It's finale.
Yeah. Covering 6 Feet Under. That's something that is beginning this week. Me and Dr. Amanda doing a season one rewatch.
Well, weirdly, it's about coming to an end.
That, right. Sure. That's mm-hmm. the true end.
Yeah.
And then also covering Grey's Anatomy with Chappelle. Got the doctor draft coming up in a couple of weeks. So excited about that.
Fun. I think you two, I mostly am podcasting with you two. Did you mention Yellowstone, Rich?
I did not.
Yeah, Yellowstone. We're recapping it along with
Yellowstone.
Yellowstone.
With Yellowstone.
Yellowstone with as long as we're following along as CBS releases the episodes on Sunday night, and then also full spoiler recaps. Both of you join me to chat about All the Light We Cannot See.
That's
which
right.
I will
all the radio say, stuff about in this episode I meant to mention that.
True. We did get a message. I got a message early today as that episode released saying I fully agreed with all three of your takes about that episode. So
wow, we're really smart.
Yeah, we're really smart. Yeah. Check that out. Full spoiler cast. We'll be talking about Upload, which is the Amazon Prime comedy, hopefully with Mike Pulliam next week as Jess Sterling. We'll be back. I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. We'll be back next week with the series finale of Tales from the Loop. Episode 8, Home. It's directed by Jodie Foster. I'm very excited for that. So we'll see you next week. Until then, ultimate fist bump.
Ultimate fist bump.